Hey, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In today's episode, we welcome in Dan Peterson. Dan is founder of The Compass for Life. Dan is a licensed clinical professional counselor, parent coach, and an advanced trainer for the Nurtured Heart Approach. He has a master's degree in clinical psychology. Dan specializes in helping adults who work with or have challenging children develop strategies for their child to succeed in both the school environment and family setting. Dan wants to provide parenting tips for children with behavioral problems and encourage positive parenting. Dan has developed his own unique coaching style based on a nurtured heart approach. He believes that in order for the nurtured heart approach to be effective, it must be practiced both at home and at school. To that end, he is passionate about training both parents and teachers. Dan's vision is to train and coach teachers and parents in the nurtured heart approach so that they can in turn provide all children with the best possible environment to flourish. He is committed to bridging the gap between home and school. Dan Peterson, brother, it's an honor and privilege to have you on the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Dan, it's such a topic. I'm really chuffed and very grateful. Larry Hagner, I know you have a great connection with him on the Dad Edge. His audience has resonated really deeply with you, with your message and work. And Larry, just very grateful that he introduced us. But you're the first, let's say, parenting expert that I've had in the show. I've been very much marriage transformation. That's been the focus and unapologetically so. But, parenting kids, for the vast majority of guys listening in, it's a major thing. And what I have found is very often, if you're having issues in marriage, there's going to be parenting. I mean, there's an upset in the house, in the ecosystem of family. So such an amazing topic and expertise to bring on. My curiosity, Dan, is how did you get into this work? Or are you one of these dads that just somehow the sun, moon, and stars lined up and you were just a fucking epic, conscious, dropped in, calm dad from the start? Or what was that entry? What was that entry into the work?
Yeah, I wish it was option two. Wish I was some kind of superhero in that way. I honestly, there's kind of a lot of paths that led to where I'm at now, but I think probably the best place to start is just what it was like for me as a kid and the family that I was raised in and how that kind of shepherded me into working with kids and families and, just trying to be a dad. But I'm the oldest of six kids. In fact, six boys. So in just a little context here. So my parents, they got married at 18 or 19 because I was on the way. And then for the next 12 years, they had a boy every 2 years. So the first 12 years of my life, my mom was pretty much breastfeeding, pregnant, nursing, sleep deprived, fully invested in taking care of little children that were 100% dependent upon her. Right. My dad was in construction. He didn't have any formal education. So he was doing a lot of blue collar work and he had his own construction business. So his focus is providing for the family that way. My mom's is, trying to raise and keep these kids safe and healthy and nurture them. But they didn't have any formal training. They didn't have they didn't have time in their marriage to work on their relationship and learn parenting skills. It was okay, we have a baby on the way. We have to get married. We have to start parenting and we'll figure this out on the fly. And so what the experience was like for me is I have a good relationship with my parents, but there was a lot of what we call it parentification, where I have to take on the role and responsibility of parent to help out. And at the time I thought that was kind of normal, but looking back, I realized that was actually too much for me. And there's some things that I wish I had or I needed, that because I didn't learn about that until I was an adult, trying to unlearn things and learn new things, which is why I resonate a lot with kind of your podcast. I've been listening to that for the last few weeks. It's just like when you're trying to learn that as an adult, it's doubly difficult or challenging because you're trying to unlearn a blueprint and a wiring that you were given that no longer serves you. Mm-hmm. And trying to do that and behave differently and learn differently and grow differently is really complicated when you're an adult versus when you're a child. So, you know, long story short, my heart, my mission is I want to give kids the best possible childhood possible. And I want to do that by giving the parents the support, the tools, the training, the frameworks that they need to make that happen. And I used to be really big on providing treatment for children, where I was a therapist and I was providing all the tools and interventions. But what I realized is if I can train the parents to be the teacher or the coach or the therapist, like progress, the transformation happens much more rapidly and it's much more sustainable because you're improving the dynamic in the home. And, you know, parents have countless more hours than the therapist ever will. So, you know, just thinking about my parents being married at 18 and by the time they were 32, having six children, I got married at 25. I went and got my master's degree. My wife and I were married for 7 years. We traveled, we worked on our marriage. We had our first child when I was 32. And I didn't feel like I was even ready for it at that point. Like, do you ever feel ready? But the amount of financial security we developed, the amount of training I got, the amount of time that my wife and I could spend on developing our marriage, like all of that is necessary. My parents didn't have that. So I wanted to bridge a gap and find a way, and how, wherever parents are on that spectrum, how can I give them what they need to have that parent-child relationship that the kid needs and the parent gets the credit for?
Yeah. I love that contrast between, you know, yourself and your queen, how you went at it compared with your parents. I did the old Jungian, or what do they call it? It's like the pattern repeat. It's like, oh, there's your shadow. You either repeat the exact same shadow because it's home, or you do something different. I did the exact same. I'm like, listening to your story going, oh my God. Yeah. Myself, Matilda, like we met I was like, what, 23 at the time. We got married our style, you know, 6 months later, a year later, you know, Matilda's pregnant. We're moving to Italy. I'm like, yeah, Dan, why could you not have shown up in my life, you know, like back then, and just fucking tell me, dude, you know, just pull in those reins a little bit. But, you know, that obviously was my path, but I really get that point. And yet a lot of guys, we've jumped into a lot without that, you know, getting up to speed, building the foundation financially, emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. There's one part of what you were speaking to, Dan, I'm really curious about, and I know, listening to your podcast with Larry, I'd love to hone in on it. I find in my nervous system shows up, this is so fucking important, is like, in your terms, my kid is the problem misconception. You know, this idea, if I heard you correctly, you were working with kids first, but then there was some part of you and say, hold on, let's work with the parents. What are you meaning by the kid is the problem misconception?
Yeah. So I'm in the field of mental health. I used to have a private practice where I would provide individual therapy for children. And the phone call was usually like that intake phone call would be something like parents calling saying, my kid needs therapy. You got ADHD, or they have bipolar, they have some kind of behavioral issue. They're out of control. We need help. And so they identified patient is the child because they're the ones presenting with problem. However, I don't believe that, I shouldn't say this. Let me say this differently. I think most of the time, the kid isn't born with some kind of developmental disability or mental health or behavioral challenge. I think it's something that has been produced as a result of the environment or some kind of trauma or tragic thing that happens. And really misbehavior, especially intense misbehavior, is really a kid trying with immense resiliency to solve a problem that they have to get a need met. So my framework is that there's no such thing as bad kids. There's no such thing as broken kids. There's no such thing as kids that are problems. The problem is the tools that we have are insufficient for the specific challenge that we're presented with. And a lot of parents go through life having this lack of awareness that there's something they're doing and creating that is feeding that problem. And so they, because they're feeling helpless, because they care about their kid and they want things to be better, they go ask somebody else to provide treatment and essentially fix their kid, not even knowing that actually, if I made changes, if I had a different tool and framework, I could create that change in my home. My kid's behavior improves, and then our family dynamic is so much more healthy.
I just love that reframe. I jotted that down immediately. It's like misbehavior equals immense resilience within the kid. That just like, it changes the game completely. It changes perspective, because I know myself, you know, myself, I speak front and center about my marriage transformation with guys, you know, 3.5-4 years ago, breakdown, breakthrough, just to bring you in the story. I know you've been following, but like total shitstorm in my inner world. Getting my marriage sorted and stable was the first thing, or maybe myself technically stable. And then my wife, again, it's like my wife, my marriage was not the problem. It was me. But then onto is like, okay, shit, we're better. Then it was like, oh man, like it was a disaster zone of trauma that I had created within our daughters, like just cyclically building up frustration, then aggressive outbursts, classic nice guy dumping that shit out. And definitely our oldest daughter, Anya, like she had been present for the most dysfunctional years early on. Man, it was like really moving to see how deeply impacted she was. Really, like she'd go into full-on freeze, full-on dissociation, could not be accessed. But I know my initial phase was like, you know, what the fuck is up with her? What the fuck? Like, there was this part avoiding, dude, this is you. And it took a while. Like in my
marriage. Can I say something real quick about that? There's something you just said. And this is a really common response and question that parents ask when their kids misbehaving or behaving in a way that doesn't make sense to them, and that it stresses them out, or they perceive it as problematic. They say, like, what the fuck's wrong with them? And really, it's not about what's wrong with them. It's feeling helpless that I don't have the tools or the understanding of what is going on with them. So it's easier for me to blame them or expect them to change, so I don't have to deal with me. Because being in a place of confusion, of helplessness is a very dangerous place to be as a parent, because you are responsible and you're in charge of raising this human. And if you don't know what to do, you don't understand why they're behaving the way, you don't have the right set of tools, start to feel helpless, of course you're going to project onto them, expecting and hoping for them to change, because then you don't have to feel those feelings anymore. Does that make sense?
That cuts to the absolute core of what I was feeling back then. You know, sure. Back then, I've done a ton of work within myself to be able to name those emotions. But I know in those periods, Dan, for years, retrospectively looking back, it's like, yeah, it was hopelessness. Yeah, it was frustration. Yeah, total confusion. Sure. Sort of great intentions. It's like knowing, it's like, I don't want to fuck this kid up. But like this total frustration and confusion of my good intentions are never, ever good enough. It's like I listen the best I can, doesn't do the job. I say the things the best I can, but it's never enough. That hopelessness definitely drove like the outburst of total exasperation. It's like, oh my God. And I really do get that. It's like just the avoidance of taking responsibility when you don't have a map, when you don't have the tools. It just feels impossible. It doesn't feel available. So you go to the default of like, blame the kid. I knew I was blaming the kid. And then afterwards, in the privacy of my nervous system, beating the shit out of myself, because inherently I knew that's you fucking up, Mark. That's useless. But I did not know how to make a break in that cycle.
Right. And part of the reason, and I talk to my parent, like the parents I work with all the time about this, especially in the initial phase, part of the reason it causes you so much angst is because you so deeply care and love for your kid, and you want more than anything to get it right. You know, if you didn't care about your kid, you didn't love them, it wouldn't bother you when they're misbehaving. Or when you see them hurting or acting in a way that's not going to be helpful for them long term.
Yeah,
it's coming from the right heart. It's just, again, lack of... That's why I'm like, there's no such thing as bad kids or bad parents. It's the tool's fault. It's the framework's fault. It's just, you know, the wrong tools for the job. So let's get you some new ones that are aligned with what's going to work and what they're needing. Improve your awareness of what's going on, so you're the expert in your child instead of, you know, hiring some other expert to fix it for you.
It's key. I'd love to hone in on one part of that, albeit it's all so important, Dan. It's like, you know, not meeting what they're needing. I'm really curious, because that's my work with guys. It's like, hey, like, stop all projections onto your wives, you know, take morality out of it. No right, no wrong. You've just got to learn the rules of what she's needing and how you land that. And once you know that, it's like happily ever after. Within reason, that's an oversimplified version, but it's like, once you know what the needs are and how to meet them, what are the fundamental needs that kids have from us as parents?
There's a lot. I would say good place to start is to know that they're loved, they're valued, they're competent, they have what it takes, they're worthy, they're safe. You know, a lot of these like social needs, like they have this need to know, who am I? Like, how should I even think about myself? What's my perception of myself? And then how do I see and perceive others? And then how do I function in those relationships? You know, kids are constantly trying to manage. They're not born with any of that. They're given to that, given those things, and those questions are answered based on how their environment responds to them. You know, if you look at the very basic, like when kids are first born, like all those attachment needs, you know, am I safe? Am I loved? Am I taken care of? Like, that's all in response to them crying. Every time they cry, they're uncomfortable. The caregiver comes over and provides food or warmth or, you know, some kind of nervous system regulation. They've learned to trust. So I think it's just kind of taking that foundation and building it up. What does it look like at age 2? What's it look like age 5, 7, 9? I have a really highly anxious son. He's going to be 12 here in about a month. But his overwhelming need that he has, especially when he gets highly anxious, is, am I safe and do I have what it takes? But he doesn't say, am I safe and do I have what it takes? What he says is, can I stay home from school? I don't want to go. Don't make me go. You hate me. Why are you torturing me? You know, all of these codes that are super frustrating, difficult to deal with. But if I don't know that this is a safety and competence issue or need that he has, I'm going to show up with the absolute wrong framework. And that's where it's punishment, shame, trying to pressure and force your kid into doing stuff versus like helping them understand what's going on in their nervous system, what the best possible way to regulate that nervous system so that they're safe. And then, of course, you have what it takes. You know exactly what to do. You've done it a million times. Let's just make it a million and one.
And how do you approach, let's say, with your son or when you're coaching parents? Because I think every single guy I've spoken with, and I know I've experienced it hundreds of times, there are these moments when, you know, the kid are so-called misbehaving. Their nervous system seems like they're out of whack. They're not just sitting down. They're not calm. They're not, like, as you say, like right in a regulating state of their nervous system. It's like, what are the key advices for dads listening in? You know, you recognize your kids in this state. Are there some key steps, Dan, that guys can like grab hold of and go, okay, cool. I mean, like 10 years screwing it up. Cool. I wasn't aware. I'm waking up today. I'm listening to Dan now. I'm game ball. You know, I'm going to grab this and fucking like, I'm going to, what can, are there like some steps that guys can grab hold of and go, okay, I'm going to go into battle, but I'm going to go into battle with these steps. I know that time when my kid drops in, and every kid will have their own unique sort of flavor. Do such steps exist, Dan, or is it different every single time?
Yeah. So you, in my intro, you can read my bio, and you were talking about the nurtured heart approach. I didn't develop this approach. It's an approach that I'm a certified advanced trainer, which means I've done like an extra degree on top of my other degrees to really be able to hold that title. But I like to look through the lens of that approach because it gives a very simple framework to use, and then some very specific tools to help meet those outcomes or goals that you want. But let me give you like the 30,000 foot view, and then we can get more granular if you think that would serve your audience well. But the whole premise behind this approach is that kids are created for connection. They need connection. I mean, we could get into all the neuroscience and physiology about how the brain develops based on connection and attachment and attunement, but that need for connection doesn't go away when you get older. There's always this need. We're social creatures. So the foundation of this approach is you as the parent, you are the prize, because the kids are constantly seeking and desiring deep connection with you. Kids, I like to call them energy seekers, or kids that are more intense emotionally or behaviorally, they just learn that they get a more alive, animated, in tune version of you when they're annoying or problematic. And so looking at it through the lens of how do I show up? When do I exchange energy with my kids and connection with my kids? How much more do I give to the things that are annoying and problematic versus the things that are like the mundane day to day? If most people took an accurate inventory of that, overwhelmingly, we give more energy, animation, emotion, focus, attention to problems. And it's not because we're deadbeats. It's because that's actually the way our brain and nervous system is wired. When something's going wrong, drive to action to correct it, fix it, get it to go away. When things are going well, your brain powers down and says you don't need to attend to it because everything's good. I mean, even think about, like, since we've been doing this podcast, there's a storm going on. You know, when the storm is hitting your house and it's really loud and there's this background noise and your internet signal starts to shake a little bit, you are highly in tune and aware of that. But on the nice sunny days where there is no interference or potential internet loss, you probably don't have a second thought about it.
Yeah, completely. I'm like, totally. I'm like, I'm smiling that you've brought the awareness of the conversation to there, because guys listening in, you're aware of it. I'm aware of it. My inner child, I used to be really, really frightened of lightning when I was younger. I mean, like, really frightened. I'm sitting here, I'm sharing this now because my inner child, my five-year-old, is like tucked in the corner and there's lightning all around me. So I want to own that. I'm having to hold space for my inner child going, just breathe. Dan is with you. You're cool. You know, lightning isn't going to kill you. I had that massive fear when I was younger. So I want to lead with that, but it's really metaphorically, it's perfect. I love that you've brought the awareness to that so intuitively, Dan, because it's like, you know, what I'm doing now is co-regulating. And I suppose that's like what you're saying. It's like co-regulating to be in space with you so I can, like, you know, have my energy locked in on you. If I can successfully do that, we have an amazing experience. But I feel that's what you're saying. That's just what the skill is in parenting. It's like kids are there to get energy, and can you meet that challenge and be with them?
Right. And like, to even take that a step further, the part of your brain right now that's needing regulation, that's maybe hyper stimulated right now because of the weather, that same part of your brain gets activated when your kids misbehave. And your brain doesn't differentiate between real threat and perceived threat. It just says, okay, this is turned on, go to fight, flight, or freeze. You know, and if you don't have some tools to regulate and work through that, well, then you're going to be in that heightened, agitated state. Well, the same thing happens when your kid starts swearing or refuses to follow directions or starts beating on their sister. It's like your brain turns on and says, I need to go get this to stop, or I need to go to somewhere where it's safe. And in trying to parent in that nervous system state of mind is very difficult unless you have tools to manage that differently. You're talking about, you have awareness of what's going on internally with you right now. You're working on some self-talk, some breathing, some like grounding in your space. It's the same thing when it comes to parenting. If you don't have a set of tools, you're going to get sucked into all that drama, thinking you're doing the right thing, but you know, you're not driving that car, somebody else is. So, you know, kind of going back to how kids are wired, kids want more energy. They want more connection. And a lot of times, if we're not careful, what we can communicate as parents is, I'll stop whatever I'm doing, connect to you around these annoying things, around these problematic things. And I'm more amped up, my heart rate's going, my blood pressure's up. And kids just become addicted to that. They're not bad kids. They're kids that just want you. And they realize that if I do this, I get that. And so why would I ever stop? That's why consequences rarely work for kids like this. Because they could care less about missing out on a privilege because, you know, those privileges or those rewards or toys or entertainment, those are like $5 bills. Your undivided attention, your amped up energy, that's $100 bills. I'm not giving up the 100 for a five any day of the week. I don't know about you, but I would never make that trade.
Man, that metaphor is just striking home so deep. It's like it's the currency of the befuddled, hopeless, well, feeling of hopelessness inside parent. I recognize that so much. It's like, oh, you know, it's like the old guard myself, slowly but surely, but I still get caught in those classic things like, hey, you know, like cartoon time. It's like cartoon. Just when you say it, I'm like, oh man, I'm fucking feeling the sweat from the storm, but I'm feeling the sweat from the storm of Dan Peterson calling my shit out directly and indirectly here. I'm like, oh man, I'm feeling the pressure. Yeah, it's just like I get caught in that cycle so much. It's like, hey, you know, like you know, do you think you're going to get cartoon time? That's something that externally they value a lot, but that never, like, it never fucking works, Dan. It's like, it actually, it doesn't work. But that metaphor, I'm like, I'm going to take that with me for life. It's like, hey, you're trying to convince them the offer or the potential taking away of a $5 bill, where you're saying, it's like, in that moment when I'm threatening to take that away from them, they're getting the $100 bill, but I'm just not aware of it. They're getting me like intensely locked in. I have a work thing. I have this, I had to do, like, we've lots of stuff. Every guy listening in has a full schedule, but in that moment, I'm giving them the full $100 bill experience. I'm laughing. I'm like, oh.
Well, wow. Isn't it powerful? Like, isn't it powerful though, that once you have that awareness and you understand what's going on, now you have the freedom to choose differently. You know, and that's, I think, that place of helplessness and hopelessness is like, I don't have a different framework. I don't have a different way of looking at this. I don't have a different set of tools. So I'm stuck and I can't tolerate this. So let me try to put my energy into getting you to change, because it like, tell me what to do, I'll do it. But if I don't know what to do and I don't understand what's happening, I'm stuck in this place. And you know, what's really funny is sometimes when we do these, we do trainings to help parents and teachers really understand this dynamic, and what we'll do is we'll have a kid in the class come up and, you know, kind of role play with us. And really what we do is we lay out a $100 bill and a $5 bill, and we ask the kids to choose. How long do you think it takes them to think through that and actually choose the $100 bill? It's instant. Like, there is no thought. It's just their hand is actually grabbing the $100 before you even give them the option to take it. And that's really the energy exchange dynamic when it comes to the classroom or the home. It's like, do I want the $100 version of you energetically, or do I want the $5 version of you? If I get the $100 version of you by being a pain in the butt and annoying and demanding and not paying attention and not listening, well, continue to do that, Dad, and I'll continue to take you for that offer. But if you give me the $100 version of you when I'm doing the right thing, when I'm doing things well, and it's, and you're deeply aware, attuned, connected to that, that I'll just go down that road. So they just follow your energy. And that's the whole foundation of this approach. So once you understand that mindset and dynamic, there's three stands like a tripod that are laden with tools. Once you can get a hold of what those tools and frameworks are, everything becomes simple after that.
Dan, I'm falling in love with you, man. This is getting awkward. This is like one of those fucking awkward moments. I have to share it, but this is fucking awkward. I love this. I'm solid. You know, I'm a solid married man, you know. It's like, yeah. But fuck me. I'm like, there's this masculine part of my brain. And I know guys listening in, I get this feedback the whole time. It's like, Mark, just like that mechanistic head. So many guys recognize, because like nature and nurture this society, profoundly sick that it is. I think most guys have been driven into magician archetype, rational mind, you know, make it fucking black and white, which is a superpower. But if that's the only tool you show up in marriage, and of course in parenting, it's like it's a disaster zone. But what I love in that, and that my whole nervous system lights up, is like, man, that is so clear. It's like, wow, it's like I've been unwittingly training my daughters. Like, if I look from a training perspective, it's like, hey, mm-hmm. I think I get it. It's like, I've trained for football. You train in the conditions that allows you have a great footballing experience. It's fucking simple. Train in jiu-jitsu. Every guy listening in knows the training metaphor. I think every single guy. But it's like, oh my God, you're just like, it's black and white. It's like, okay, I've been training my daughters unwittingly to give me shit. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like, I coach a fucking team or like a, did some jujitsu training, like some coaching, like, you know, years ago. I was like, it's like I went to that soccer team and went, how to not pass a ball straight. It's like, this is how you like just teaching them the wrong thing that was guaranteed to lose the match. It just makes no sense. I'm laughing. Excuse me. I'm like, there's this nerdy part in me gets into overdrive. I get super excited when I get that mechanism, but I'm hearing you, man. It's really simple.
Mark, and what that reveals to me is like how deeply committed and loving you are to those that you care about, especially your children. Mm. Like, you wouldn't be giggling and laughing and being like, oh, fuck me, I can't believe I didn't notice this, unless you were open. Mm. Right? And if you feel any guilt or shame about how you've shown up in result of kind of this new knowledge, it just means like, okay, now you can align that new knowledge and truth with how am I going to show up differently, because I care and love for my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the like, to me, that's the number one prerequisite to have if this approach would ever work. The parents that I talk to that are like, well, you don't understand, here's how bad my kid is, those are the ones that are stuck looking at their kid to change instead of being ready to look in the mirror. And you know, it's funny too, when I first heard this guy speak about this approach in my initial training, I had this really weird emotional reaction to what he was saying, because just like you, it was brand new knowledge and it was like a light bulb went on. And my first response was rage. And that rage was about, I have a master's in clinical psychology. I've been on the front lines with the most challenging kids on the planet. Why has nobody told me about this until today?
Wow.
I was like, I needed this before I ever was in front of a child. Mm. And then I had tremendous guilt because I started to scroll through all the kids and families I worked with that didn't get better. They got mildly better. And I was like, if I would have had this and given that to them, you know, things would have been different. Because this is exactly what's going on. These kids are seeking deep connection and relationship, and they get it through adversity. And the more adverse they are, the more loving, compassionate people on the planet show up in their lives. I mean, these kids had a parent, they had a social worker, they had a counselor, they had a psychiatrist, they had a treatment team. I mean, think about the most loving people on the planet. They had an army of them that were only in their life because they were so problematic. They're never giving those up.
Oh, man.
And then the third stage towards the end of the training was just hope and clarity. It's like, this is exactly what I'm doing moving forward. Ended up opening up my own business and started doing professional development days for teachers and bringing it into classrooms. And then created like a 90-day coaching process to help parents learn and master this approach in a way that's congruent with like their family values and the personality of their family.
Oh man, I'm deeply moved, and like, thank you so much for sharing, you know, what was life for you having had such a level of profound professional training and that light bulb moment, and just looking back going, oh my God, it's like, you know, just that level of guilt or the rage of such like an incomplete training that did not prepare you to meet their needs in such a, what is like an ultimately simple way. And I find what's really moving for that in me is like, I actually was tearing up is, I really believe, and I'm getting that this is a core belief that you share, you know, and, you know, thank you for reflecting back that it's my love for my kids. But Dan, it's been my experience that guys listening in, every single guy I've spoken with, but I come from this core belief, like every guy listening in on a deep, deep level, every man knows he's love, just knows he's love on a deepest spiritual level. And it's like our only issue in life as men is like, how do we communicate that? How do I express that and get that out? But it's like my grief is in a society that, you know, we learn, we've been told that we end up being conditioned to beat the shit out of ourselves. There's like the perfect dad has the two cars, lovely house, tons of money, you know, kids if you're in the States goes to Harvard, if you're in UK goes to fucking, you know, whatever school, Eton, you know, etc, etc. That, you know, oh, you're a successful dude. It's like, and yet it's like really foundational to the human experience. It's like we're love, but the pain of our existence is just not being able to express that love in a way that's meaningful for others. Hey Dan, I'm just loving every single part of the clarity of the perspectives you're bringing forward. Dan, I believe I heard you mention a few minutes ago, and I jotted down straight away. I believe the metaphor, the image you were bringing to mind was like a stool with three legs. What were you referring to there, and what's the importance of?
Yeah. So it's the framework of nurtured heart. You have to have these three legs or stools in place. Otherwise the whole thing will collapse. And again, the foundation is, you know, you being the prize, your energy being the kit, the gift, the reward that the kids are after. So three stands are about how to use that energy in a way that's going to serve you and enhance the relationship, as opposed to putting undue stress and problems. So I'll outline the three stands. Most people have used these three stands at different times, but it's critical that you use them in unison to get the internal transformation in a child. So the first stand, absolutely no unnecessary energy for problems. And I'm not saying no energy, but no unnecessary energy. So lectures, warnings, countdowns, threats, bribes, anything that you do that communicates, hey, I'm engaged in paying attention right after a problem happened, and it's not a consequence, it's just unnecessary drama, and you're shooting yourself in the foot by saying, you know, I see you, I notice you, I have an energy available, and I'm giving it to you at the worst possible time. You follow me?
Totally. I'm following. You're not hearing the quick, rapid B-roll beating off my page here as I'm taking notes. I'm like, I'm going home. I'm like front. I'm the nerdy dude at the front of the college lecture that's the most uncool in the class because he's like just fucking gobbling it all up. I'm totally there, man. Totally there.
Okay. Second stand is, instead of that, and this is the paradigm shift, is you have to give a lot of really good intentional energy when things are going well, and or when problems are not happening. And typically, you know, when I roll this out for the first time for parents, they're like, well, I am positive. I do give a lot of compliments. I do praise my kid. There's actually four ways to do this. I'll kind of reveal one of them right now, just so you guys have some practical tools to use. But this is less about praising your kid, and it's more about encouraging them. Praising is telling your kid that you are pleased or how you feel about their behavior. Encouragement is revealing to them what their behavior shows about them. You know, so for example, your kid puts their dishes away without being asked. Praising would be, hey, you're such a good kid. Thank you so much. That really helped me out. You know, you're telling them that you're pleased and you're happy with what they did. That's praise. Encouragement would be, hey, I see you put the dishes away without having to be reminded. That shows a lot of independence and responsibility and thoughtfulness. It's just speaking the truth about what you saw and attaching character to it, as opposed to, you know, the kid experiencing that as, well, mom and dad are happy. Mm. So the place to start, and I'm going to use you as an example here, since you've been pretty transparent up to this point. Do you ever talk to your kids about respect?
With great trepidation, yes. I have. Fuck.
Of course. Teeing this up.
I'm joking.
Your answer to this is going to be 100% guaranteed. Everybody in the audience is going to say the same thing. Everybody that I've talked to prior to this says the same thing. And this was me before I learned about this approach. What prompts you to have a conversation with your kid about respect?
I mean, it just comes to mind. It's like when I don't feel I'm being respected.
Yeah, disrespectful behavior.
I just want to be transparent. It's like I have so much of a library of conscious language arsenal that I could have fucking bullshitted an answer, but it's like that's the real answer. I'm feeling the heat again, and the storm has passed.
Cool. Well, and how open are your kids to your words of wisdom about the importance of respect when they're being disciplined, when they're being lectured, or when you're having these conversations?
Oh man.
Yeah. Well, and here's the science or the psychology behind it. Is when you've done something wrong, your defensiveness goes up. And it's to protect you from feeling embarrassment, shame. And typically what that looks like in kids is they make up excuses, they blame someone else, they just nod their head, it goes in one ear and out the other. They're just trying to get that moment over as soon as possible. And there's no real learning that's happening under those circumstances. And what's really interesting is our intention is right on the money. It's important to have respectful children. When you behave in a way that's respectful towards yourself and others, your relationships thrive. It's coming with the right intention in the sense of, I love you. That's why I'm having this conversation. I don't want you to experience pain. However, the timing could not be more awful. And so the flip of this is the time to talk about respect is when you see evidence of it. So you can confront your kid with the truth of, you are respectful. Here's exhibit A through Z. And you go through each day just pointing out specific things you're observing and saying, this is who you are. You know, you put your dishes away without being told. You got your homework done on time. You put your dishes away. You looked me in the eye when I was talking to you. You held the door open for your mother. You shook that stranger's hand and made eye contact. Those are all examples of you showing respect. And what happens is kids start to have this irrefutable evidence that this is who I am, and here's all the evidence to support it. Once kids start to believe that, that's when the internal change happens and the behavior transforms as a result, because their behavior is congruent with the proof. As opposed to kids that constantly are disrespectful or impulsive or annoying and nagging, their behavior is just congruent with the proof that's been energized up to that point. When I first learned about this, and for the first time I heard it, my brain almost broke, because I'm like, that's the exact opposite of everything I've been taught and trained and experienced throughout my life. And that's where all that guilt came from, because I was like, oh crap, what have I done? I've given you the best version of me when you're at your worst.
Yeah. Do you know what's coming through me, Dan? It's like emerging early in the conversation. My queen Matilda, has been big into horses. We've 8 horses, we've like 25 animals. So like animals, you know, not wild animals, but like they are wild in their essence, has been a big part of her life. And horror learning, and I've learned a lot from them. And everything I've learned through Matilda and the Horses. Like, she does horsemanship, or horsewomanship, as she likes to call it. It's
I just like to cut it short and say I like to do horse shit.
She, like, it's the exact same pattern. It's like she was working for years and people would bring the problematic horse. And it's like, it's not a problematic horse. It's the exact same. It's precisely the exact same. Like, great horsemanship is the exact same. It's like, hey, you're unwittingly, you're disciplining the horse to get a certain behavior, but it's your unwittingly copper fastening those exact same pathways in that horse's nervous system to give you the shit that you want it to stop. So it's like, it's, and we had a dog, and I'm really there again, the nerdy part in me going, oh man, this is just like, it's a universal truth, because when we got our dog good number of years ago, I had no experience with sort of powerful, potentially aggressive dogs, not inherently aggressive, but if I didn't know, and we have a Siberian Husky Akita mix. It's a big, you know, it's quite a big dog, and she's very dominant. I went into Cesar Millan's work, you know, the dog whisperer, all his work.
And
it's the exact same thing. I'm just bowled over by like the universal nature of, you know, if it works with dogs, if it works with horses, everything you're saying here now, it's like, it's pretty much different language, but it's the exact same principles in all of this. There, if it's universally true, and everything you're, when you're speaking, I listen to my nervous system, everything you're saying, Dan, my nervous system is softening into the truth of it. It's just fucking true. It's just so self-evident what you're saying. So yeah, excuse me. I just, bit of a tangent, but I just wanted to share those key parts of like the natural world has signs. It's mirroring back. If it's true, the creature in front of us drops into a beautiful, relaxed state or not.
Yeah, and what's super cool, just to piggyback on that, is when you start to use Stand 2 and you start to connect to your kid and provide energy in this way, you're going to see the same response from them. You're going to see them relax. You're going to see them smile. You're going to see them look at you in the eye. You're going to see their shoulders kind of, you know, stand a little taller and back. And what's really happening neurologically is new pathways are being formed that's aligned with that truth. And that's why the behavior is a transformative process rather than just temporary improvement based on the benefit, like the rewards or consequences of specific behavior. I don't know about you, but I'm in the long run here. I want my kids to thrive because they're good, healthy, well-adjusted human beings. Not my kids to obey me because it makes me feel better and I'm in charge now.
Yeah.
And you know, there's going to be storms. Like, you use this approach, you're not going to get a perfect kid. But if you have a kid that is honest, that is resilient, that perseveres, that is respectful, loving, and kind, shoot, they're going to thrive in relationships, in the role as parents, coworkers, their friend groups are going to be different. Confidence in their self, like, that's there's this term we use in the Nurtured Heart approach. It's really about establishing and building, investing in something we call inner wealth, which is a belief system that says I'm valuable, I'm competent, I have what it takes to overcome any challenge that's brought to me, and I have a responsibility to do my best for me and for others. Like, to me, that's the most well-adjusted human being possible. Because kids have adversity. Like, it's harder to be a kid now than it was when I was a kid. I want them to know that they have what it takes to overcome those challenges.
Amen to that. And from that inner wealth perspective, and you've, like, got me even more profound, and imagine every guy in. If I've been following you correctly and jotting, like, a second page of notes down here, with my beautiful scribbled stool on top, it's like a 2-year-old had an epileptic fit. This stool, I'm looking at it, it's like, I'm glad we're not doing anything on YouTube. I don't want to show this. It's a squiggle. It's more like a porcupine upside down. Anyway, forgetting that. So if I've been following you correctly, Dan, with full sincerity, we've covered 2 of the legs of the stool. So there's no unnecessary energy for problems. You went into a deep dive in that. The second leg of the stool is was it lots of intentional energy when things are going well? You've done a deep dive in that. So we've got two of these pillars or these legs of the stool, but it's still incomplete. As you were saying, we need to get the third one and have them happening, you know, in tandem together. What's the third leg?
And again, they're all equally as important. This will not work if you're missing one. Mm. So the third stand is absolute clarity with where the line is. And if it's crossed, there's accountability. But the dynamic here is I'm more focused on how you take ownership, learn from your mistakes, and move forward than I am making you pay for having a problem or a mistake. The whole point of discipline is to teach and train. It's to level up. It's to develop skills. You have to make mistakes to develop mastery. You're not born with mastery. You learn by trial and error. And the more mistakes you make, the more opportunity it is to learn from those, make adjustments. So the analogy that I like to use for this one, and I hope this will work with your audience, it's similar to how a referee would officiate a basketball game. If a player is dribbling the ball and they step out of bounds, whether their toe is on the line or whether they're, you know, 10 feet out of bounds, the ref has the same response. They just blow the whistle and say out of bounds. And the player's response to that is to give the ball to the ref to try again. Like, it's simple. You made a mistake. It's not a big deal. Let's try it again. And what happens over time, I used to coach my boy, or actually all three of my kids when they were younger, but I don't know if you've ever seen a bunch of five-year-olds trying to play basketball for the first time, but it's a fight for the ball. And then it becomes a game of tag or runaway.
Yeah.
Where they just get the ball and they run without dribbling. They're not looking at their surrounding. They're just trying to get away, and everybody's following them in a crowd and they're all screaming for the ball too. It's mad chaos.
With spontaneous scenes of UFC.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And so to teach these kids floor spacing, teamwork, the skills of being able to dribble, to stay in bounds, to pay attention to out of bounds, like, they don't have that. The way that they're taught that is by the ref blowing the whistle every time they step out of bounds and just saying, hey, that's a turnover. You have to stay in bounds. And what happens over time is kids continue to violate that. Then the light bulb clicks and they say, I need to avoid that spot. So they stop dribbling that way. And then they learn to dribble with their eyes up and they can scan the floor. Then they can dribble, stay away from the out of bounds, see the teammate, and pass the ball. Like, by being held accountable, they're provided the opportunity to master dribbling and staying in bounds. And unfortunately, could you imagine what would happen if a referee would start yelling at a kid when they stepped out of bounds? And we're like, that's the fifth time today. What's your problem? What are you going to do differently next time? You know, go sit on the bench, think about what you did. Or started chasing a player down the court saying, look out, you're about ready to step out of bounds. If you step out of bounds, it's a turnover, then you're going to be benched. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be ridiculous. And the reason that would be problematic is because the ref is more invested in the player playing by the rules, as opposed to giving the freedom and the control back to the player saying, here's the bounds. It's my job to hold you accountable. When you're in, life is good. When you're out, life is bad. But you have the freedom to choose, and I'm not emotionally invested in the decision you make. If we can parent and discipline from that mindset where I'm not emotionally attached to your decisions, but my responsibility and the lane I need to stay in is to show you what happens when you step out of bounds. Shame is removed from the picture, and life lessons and discipline actually has an opportunity to be produced.
I just want to share right now live. I'm tearing up with that clarity. Hmm. You know, shame removed. I have, like, I'm 39 years old, soon 40. I have years of shame. Been doing fucking tons of work, but that clarity is just bringing me back to childhood, what my nervous system went through, and went, oh my fucking God, if I had that environment where mistakes weren't trounced upon, where, you know, where there was that freedom to choose, but like that, there was no emotional attachment to my decisions. It was like, good boy, I got heaped praised. It was like a fucking, I don't know, dare I say, like a cocaine rush. I've never taken it, but it's like that sort of a high.
Yeah.
And I learned, oh, you're valuable, you're worthy.
Yeah.
If you do the behavior.
And yeah, it's based on your performance.
Yeah. And yet the savage flip side of that for me emotionally as a child. And I brought the same type of parenting in, you know, I didn't know any different. And it's the savage side of that is other side of that coin is, yeah. But what happens if you go out of bounds, as you said, the referee turns on you. It's like you fucked up. It's astounding clarity, Dan. It's astounding clarity. The three stools and having that together. You asked me like, oh, does that metaphor work? I really love that. Just being the referee, the ref doesn't give a fuck, you know, player in, player out. It's like, that's the rule. That's the boundary. I totally get it. It's like, dude, it's so clear. It's so clear. You just keep showing. I'm giddy. I hear you laughing. It's like, I'm like a child at Christmas here, just opening up gifts going, oh fuck. Finally, Santa got me the present I wanted. It's like, amazing clarity. Really amazing. I'm deeply moved here. I wanted to share that. Deeply, deeply moved on a personal level. My inner visor going back on my childhood, but also me as a parent going, wow, I can like really show up in a much more profoundly and consistent way. You said something that's really key here, because there's a part of me, like I definitely come forward with the vulnerability. I have been doing much better in the last number of years with my kids, but the thing that was jumping out at me that is like humble pie, when you were saying it's like, we all use the three of them, but it's if you don't use them together. I'm like seeing that as like a major takeaway for me. It's like, cause I do sort of flit in and out of them, but the three together, that level of consistency, no. And in fact, my results, my kids' nervous systems, they're giving me the direct feedback, Mark, like you can raise your game. Dan, I'm on fire here. I'm feeling love and I'm feeling like, one thing I'm feeling is like an infinite surge of hope being armed with accurate tools and a map in front of me. Psychologically, that's invaluable.
Sure.
And I'm quite sure a lot of guys out there, the majority of guys listening in, I don't have exact statistics on it, but like the majority of guys have kids. And I'm really clear. Larry Hagner is not inviting you back in on the dad edge. I know you like went down as a sensational success. He's not inviting you back, man. I want to invite you back for like 20 special episodes. I'm gonna creep you out. I'm gonna stalk you down. Like, I've so many more questions. You said it to me earlier. You're like, Mark, I could speak to this for 7 or 8 hours. Like, not to mention like 80 minutes. So much appreciation and so much clarity. But I'm radically confident. Every guy listening in that's a dad wants to know more about you, about your approach, how to work with you, how to follow you. Where can these guys find you online?
Yeah, I would say probably the best way. Well, let me back up. Just a couple of things that have been emerging for me as we've been. I love having these conversations too, because it helps me think through how I'm showing up as a dad. And, you know, I was sharing with you, I think I was sharing with you, or maybe it was a parent I was working with before we got on the call. Did I tell you how my son's been saying, I hate, like, you hate me?
You mentioned that at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm wondering about? Like, it's so important when kids misbehave or they do things wrong, like this referee analogy, that your discipline is emotionally neutral. And I'm wondering if, because I got upset, maybe I projected anger and frustration, that produced shame from him. And that's where that comment of you hate me is coming from. And so, you know, just me talking this through, getting feedback from you has helped me just kind of zone and really like laser focus in on when he's doing things that irritate me, which are pretty much just normal 11-year-old boy stuff. I'm going to be highly focused, you know, over the next few weeks to make sure that I'm emotionally calm when I'm disciplining, because I think I might inadvertently be sending that message that I hate you, which of course I don't. I love him with an abundance. But that might be the way he's receiving it, because I'm frustrated with his behavior as opposed to just being the referee and not emotionally attached to what he does.
Do you know what's strikingly obvious with what you're doing there now, in my perspective? It's, and I feel it's like the deepest part intuitively of parenting. It's like you've just accessed a part of you that the referee in you has just went, hey, Dan, you know, you haven't been playing within the rules. You're noticing without any emotional attachment, you know, hey, you were out of bounds there a couple of times. You know, it's clearly, you know, just play within this side of the line and you're cool. There's almost this part of me that's like, that's just a perfect embodiment. I'm deeply moved and impressed by how you've just brought this at the very end, which is ultimately, don't be an asshole referee with yourself. Keep it, keep emotional impartiality. It's like, don't beat yourself up. If you're not having any effect, get objective, course correct. You'll grow from it as a dad, as a man. And from there, if you can do that, like you've done there, man, beautiful, beautiful parenting. And just your example there, I'm really, yeah, just really loving that example. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Kind of just to answer your question before that, like where my specialty is a 90-day coaching program to help parents learn and master this approach in a way that fits for their family mission statement, for the type of parents they want to be, the type of kids they have, the age, like to make this very personal and genuine experience for them. And that's one of the things I love about Nurtured Heart, is this isn't a rigid program. It's an approach that has some guardrails, but how you implement it is going to be genuinely you, as long as it falls within those three stands. So, you know, if any of your listeners are interested in that, the best way to kind of get a hold of me to find out more, just go to my website. It's thecompassforlife. It's the4.com. So thecompassforlife.com. I have a contact page. Just send me a quick message that way. I'll reply to you personally. The other thing is I have a free ebook on my homepage. It's called Especially for Parents, 20 Things You Need to Know If You're Considering Counseling or Meds for Your Kids. It's really the top 20 questions I get for parents that are thinking about getting some help for their kids or they're struggling with parenting. It's kind of a bigger resource. I don't know, there's probably 30 or 50 pages in it, but that way you'll also be on my newsletter list and get parenting tips and stuff too. But I would say those are the two places to start.
Dan, excuse me. Dan, thank you so much. And well, thank you for coming in. One thing I need to honor you, and we've sort of mentioned it during it, like the storm. I want to thank you personally for having the resilience, the presence, and the focus to stay grounded. The guys listening in obviously are going to get the edited version, but right from me and on behalf of every man listening in, you stuck this to the long run. There was like 7 and 8 minute gaps as I was scrambling to get connection back up, but you just met me every single time with a completely regulated, dropped in, present nervous system and took it back on and to provide immense value for every single man that self-identifies as a powerful father. So thank you for that, Dan. Real depth of appreciation for you, brother.
Yeah, it's an honor. I love talking to dads and something I'm fully committed to being the best dad I can possibly be and sharing anything that helps other men level up their game. And again, having conversations with you about this stuff, it helps me like think a lot more introspectively about things I can adjust and change. And yeah, I think it's necessary to have other men in your corner. So I appreciate the opportunity for sure.
Thank you, Dan. Heroic husbands, kingly brothers, and potent, powerful, amazing dads out there. I mean, it's an understatement to say that there's gold coins in, what is it, 65, 70, 75 minutes. I've lost count of the times. I'm on two pages of notes. scribbling to super tiny writing at the end from the volume, the fire hydrant of incredible information there. But information, guys, as always, it's useless. Transformation happens in the implementation. The invitation and the challenge to you now is take those inspired impulses, those insights, take one, two of them, the most important ones, find creative ways to implement them. And hey, part of it is like, reach out to Dan, reach out for that support. We say it here in the culture. I want to bring this unapologetically front and center. Lone wolfing does not change the game for you. It's like, reach out for that support, free ebook, check out the 90-day challenge. Keep repeating, going back on this episode, if it really speaks to your heart, it has spoken to my heart. I'm feeling so much hope, so much focus and positivity going back into the parenting arena beyond this, as I know you will. And it's all part of this movement and perfectly in line with our mantra. Better husbands today, and dare I say and add, better fathers today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day. And before you go, kingly brothers, I'm so happy to let you know that Heroic Husbands Men's Circles waiting list is now live. Online meetings supporting you up level to hero husband status. Go from fearing your best will never be good enough to becoming the competent and confident husband she brags about. Save years of needless guesswork and confidence eroding disconnection. Click on the link in the podcast description to take your first simple step to becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Check it out now.